From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Yesterday, the Illinois General Assembly adopted a new set of district boundaries for seats in the Illinois State House and Senate. More precisely, Democrats in the General Assembly adopted the new maps. The party holds supermajorities in both the House and Senate and drew the districts with an eye toward maintaining and expanding their power. Republicans, as you would expect, are crying foul, and so for that matter are a few good government groups. Much of their critique has focused on the process Democrats used to create these new maps. Here's State Representative Avery Bourne from Morrisonville during Tuesday's debate.
You might as well say, we drew this for our own power. Hope you like it. You might get to read it after you vote on it. This is the opposite of transparent. It was a sham to ask the public to be in those hearings if you're not even going to take into consideration their suggestions.
Bourne is an assistant Republican leader in the Illinois House of Representatives, and so is our first guest today. State Representative Tim Butler represents Springfield and some of the rural areas north of the city in the Illinois General Assembly. Representative Butler, welcome to the 21st. Thank you for being here.
Brian, I appreciate the opportunity to be on.
Listeners, as ever, we'd like to invite you to join our conversation. The number to call is 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. You can also always tweet us at 21st Show. So, Representative Butler, I want to begin with maps. There's other things I want to talk about as well, but let's start with these maps. That was the major legislative action yesterday. As I said, new district boundaries for the Illinois House and Senate. I want to start small and zoom out from there. Can you tell me about your new district? You're going to be in the 95th?
Absolutely. The district that I was drawn into is significantly different than the current district I represent. It has much more, majority of the city of Springfield now. So the northwest and south sides of the city of Springfield, it includes Springfield kind of suburban communities of Chatham and Rochester. Then it goes kind of southeast into rural Christian County and goes a little bit northeast over into rural Macon County as well. As opposed to the current district I'm in, which goes from the north side of Springfield all the way almost up into the Peoria area to Pekin. So definitely a big change for the district that I live in.
Yeah, no, and the reason we have listeners all over the state who are not represented by you, but the reason I want to sort of drill down on this is I think it's illustrative of what was happening, because the parts of Springfield that are not in your district and the parts of are combined with parts of Decatur, right? And the idea there that I think Democrats have is that it's a Democratic district. You probably could not elect a Democrat if you had the city of Springfield all in one district, but by carving out parts of Springfield and parts of Decatur and pushing them together, and I'm not as familiar with the Decatur geography, but I can say in Springfield, it's the downtown and it's the east side. The east side is predominantly African-American in Springfield. And so Democrats think they can, you know, maintain their state representative there. I mean, this is where you kind of get into these definitions of, is this a fair map? What is your perspective on what has happened with Springfield in particular in these new maps?
Well, Brian, I think you summarized it very well. And the current district that goes from Decatur into Springfield was drawn 10 years ago, specifically with the purpose to elect a Democrat in areas that had been represented by Republicans before. And 10 years ago, the House and Senate Democrats were able to draw the maps under Governor Quinn and get them enacted. And so you saw this this continuation of, I think, gerrymandering over the decades that now is such a fine art, where you draw communities, you know, inner city Decatur, inner city Springfield to get a district together. And you know, we've made this a point for all throughout the hearings and before that the splitting of these communities is not good. And when someone on the in downtown
the splitting of Springfield, you mean, for example. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. I mean, you know, I've made the point where I live on the north end of Springfield. You know, you can go three blocks south of my house and you're represented by someone who lives in Decatur. And we talk a lot about communities of interest and so on. But when we divide communities like Springfield, I don't think it serves the purpose for the people. And it is done. It is done at the end of the day for partisan political purposes. Democrats have had the ability to do it here in Illinois for the last decade plus. But, you know, Republicans do it around the country as well. And it's really, I think, what comes to the surface with a lot of the frustrations we hear from the public and the advocacy groups about, you know, we need to find a better way to do this, because splitting up this community, these communities like we've done in Springfield, is not the way to do it. And now we see a similar district now that runs from the south side of Peoria over to Bloomington Normal, which is a brand new district, basically replicating what they've done in Springfield, Decatur, and putting it in the Peoria Bloomington market as well.
What would you say to people, though, who say that, you know, an African-American person living on the east side of Springfield probably has more in common with a Black person in Decatur than they do with, you know, a white person living just across Springfield in terms of what they want to see out of their state government?
You know, these are all the things that we have to navigate when we go through the process. Certainly, minority districts are part of the discussion. The Republicans spent a lot of time talking about that, the fact that minority districts need to be represented. So I think the district that was created, the Decatur Springfield district that was created under, that was approved last night, the 96th district, I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 30% African-American, I think, in that district is what I saw. So certainly a significant portion. While the city of Springfield itself, I think, is 25% African-American, if I'm not mistaken. So to your point about drawing a map that's more representative of a single community, I think we can get to the same ends of you know, minority representation, but also respecting existing governmental boundaries that people are accustomed to. I think last night, I think Representative Bourne was the one that brought up the fact that under this map that we approved last night, 60 counties, and many of them small rural counties, 60 counties in Illinois get divided in legislative districts. And that's not good. I mean, when you see things like that, it's no doubt that a county like Christian County, south of Springfield, gets divided into four legislative districts for a county of, you know, 30,000 people or something. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And I think it creates a lot of skepticism in the public about the entire process when they see things like that.
Interesting. I know somebody who's much better steeped in redistricting than I am, who says favoring county boundaries, which is actually written into certain state constitutions, not Illinois, but favoring county boundaries tends to favor Republicans. Municipal boundaries tends to go with Democrats, although in Illinois, they don't really seem to honor either of those boundaries in crafting the district. So what in your view would be a more fair map, right? I mean, it is, I think when you look back, whether it's President Biden versus President Trump, Senator Duckworth, Senator Durbin, Governor Pritzker, they've all gotten around 55% of the statewide vote in Illinois. And that is about the ratio that Democrats hold, at least under the current Illinois House of Representatives. It is more lopsided in the Senate. What, in your view, would be a more fair map?
Well, it's certainly higher than that percentage. You know, we have 73 House Democrats, 45 House Republicans. So, you know, they have a super majority, you know, two-thirds majority in the House, and as you said, larger than that in the Senate. But I think it's more about how we draw the maps necessarily than what exactly is the outcome. A fair map would allow for fair elections. And I've used my current district as an example, the district that I've run in four times now. The fact that it was drawn to pack Republicans in a district to create that Springfield-Decatur district on one end, and to create a potential Democratic district on the northwest corner that ended up actually being Republican. But it was drawn with partisan intents to pack Republicans into my district. So basically the only thing, honestly, I've ever had to worry about in my 6+ years of being in the legislature is a primary challenge. And this gets to the larger issue nationally of this polarization when it comes to legislative and congressional boundaries, packing, you know, one side or the other into the district to make districts uncompetitive in a general election. And when you look at the overall totals in Illinois, it's astounding how many members of the General Assembly really face either no or token opposition in general elections. And what that leads to is more partisan, you know, polarization and partisanship. And so I think to set up a process that takes the politicians out of it, like we've advocated, a fair map process, an independent or bipartisan commission that's independent of the legislature, that is a great way to do it. It's not a perfect way, but it's certainly better than the process that we've seen take place over the last few months in Illinois.
Yeah, and we can come back to some of the consequences of those, you know, people who are more interested in thinking about their primary elections than their general election. I think we'll come back to that point when we're talking about COVID and the state's COVID response. But on this idea of the process, sticking with that, and let me just take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with State Representative Tim Butler. He's a Republican from Springfield and is an assistant Republican leader in the Illinois State House of Representatives. Part of the big thrust of the objections that I've heard from Republicans and some good government groups is about the process here. You drove 3 hours, I believe you said, for a meeting this weekend. Can you just talk about what that experience was like?
Sure. We over the weekend, we held 5 hearings across the state, including a hearing Sunday morning at 10 a.m. in Aurora, which... You know, it's an amazing time to think about that we would have a public meeting on something this important when people are with their families or going to church or something like that. So I got up early on Sunday, drove to Aurora, which is a 2:45 or 3 hour drive, stopping and picking up coffee on the way. When I arrived for the 10 a.m. hearing, I arrived there about 9:50. The doors to the facility that we were doing in this hearing in were locked. And the doors remained locked until after the hearing was set to begin at 10 a.m. Myself and another Republican legislator, Jeff Kiker from Sycamore, showed up, finally got in, a couple staff people, and there was a handful of people from the public as well. We got the hearing underway. Representative Kiker and I were the only ones there in person. There was no one from the other side of the aisle that was there in person. Everyone else was virtual. And we heard from... one or two witnesses that day, that's it, and virtually, and the people that showed up didn't want to testify. But I think it underscores, you know, really how this process needs to be better. First of all, we shouldn't have a hearing at 10 a.m. on a Sunday morning. That's ridiculous. And secondly, they need to be noticed better. And first of all, we need to make sure that, you know, the facilities are available and acceptable to the public, that the doors are open and plenty of time that people show up and things like that. And I think it just shows that you know, the way that the process was handled by the majority really wasn't sincere when you see things like that happen. They were just going through the motions to check off the boxes to say that they had a public hearing on it.
Sure. And ultimately, they have the supermajority votes. They can do what they want. You had a Twitter thread on this, and there was somebody who replied to you who said, I would take the, and this is the person on Twitter, not me, but I would take the ILGOP mapping concerns much more seriously if you were calling for a national end to gerrymandering, not just an end to gerrymandering in states where you are losing, end quote. What do you say to that?
Well, I have. I mean, I've said that. And I think nationally we should take a look at this. The map making process is the purview of state legislatures. So you've got 50 different sets of laws that you have to deal with. Congress has attempted to do this on the national level through HR 1, on the congressional level, at least for congressional districts, to go to a nonpartisan commission. And that is something that a lot of us support. I know I've talked to Congressman Rodney Davis about this. That's a portion of HR 1 that he supports. I would be fine with that. I don't have a problem with that. If states would go, and you've seen a lot more states go to commission style drawing of their maps. Iowa has done it for a long time. Has been a national leader on things like this. So I think it's the way to go. And especially in today's day and age, where you know there's so much information that is available to the public through websites and the data that's available on the internet to crunch and slice this data. You can go online to different websites and draw your own maps if you want to. I think this would, you know, this it's a sea change in how we draw maps. You're not pulling the old vellum paper out and tracing lines over maps and things like that. And I think that gives us the opportunity to engage the public more and go to a system that, again, takes the politicians out of it. Maybe it's a complete commission model. Maybe it's a hybrid model that some states have used where they have a commission that kicks it to the legislature. Then the legislature has to do an up or down vote in, you know, a supermajority fashion or something like that. You know, there's a way forward that's other than just, you know, the legislators sitting in locked rooms, drawing the maps and then, you know, rolling them out an hour before we're supposed to vote on them.
All right. We're going to have to take a break. Listeners, let me just remind you, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with State Representative Tim Butler, a Republican from Springfield and an assistant Republican leader in the Illinois House of Representatives. So far, we've been talking about the new set of legislative district maps for the Illinois House and Senate, not congressional maps. We're expecting those later this year. You might be thinking, didn't we already hear this story a month or two ago? Yes, you did, but new census information came out, so this is a new set of maps, will be what lawmakers run in for the next 10 years. When we come back after the break, we're going to be asking Representative Butler about the state's COVID response, the Republican perspective on how Governor Pritzker has been doing with the reimposed mask mandate and some other issues in the news. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. More to come on the 21st after a short break. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we're continuing our conversation with State Representative Tim Butler. He's an assistant Republican leader in the Illinois House of Representatives, represents Springfield in the Illinois General Assembly. Presently, Springfield and sort of the rural areas north, assuming the new maps that lawmakers passed yesterday are approved, he will, and assuming he runs again and is reelected, he would be representing more of Springfield, some of Springfield's quote-unquote suburbs, and some rural areas to the east of the city. All right, I think we've probably spent enough time on maps. I'm fascinated by the topic. I could talk all day, but I'm sure some of our listeners are driving off the road right now. So let's turn to COVID. I wonder, do you think Governor Pritzker is right to have reimposed universal masking in Illinois?
Well, I think the issue with the governor on so many of these orders is, in my opinion, the lack of engagement with the legislature. And I'll just give one example. You know, so I talked to Leader Durkin. It was the night before the governor imposed the mask mandate, or it came out. He had called Leader Durkin about things, didn't even bring up this issue in his discussion with the leader. And then it was announced right after their phone call. And I think that underscores the fact that the governor really hasn't truly engaged the legislature on this stuff. And I think we'd like to work on a lot of this stuff. The other thing is,
Can I pause on that? What form would that engagement, what would form would that engagement take? I mean, should he be asking for laws about masking?
I think a couple things. I think if there are specific legislative avenues we want to go down to seriously look at this, let's have good discussions about that, not just, you know, throwing things out or throwing things at the last minute, but actually let's have good discussions about that. But I also think from a messaging perspective, you know, so much of this has been politicized, and to get past those political, you know, walls, engagement is important. And just those conversations and, you know, letting people in on the decision-making process and having good discussions with them and wanting to be involved with them. Look, Brian, and I think you probably know, but a lot of the folks listening to the show across the state probably don't know. You know, I've been a big supporter of the vaccines, and I've stood up at news conferences as the lone public official in my district pushing vaccines, telling people to get vaccinated. I think that's highly important that people get vaccinated. And that's one avenue I think the governor really has fallen down on is the cooperation on as far as messaging goes. But I also think, I introduced legislation that said the governor gets one shot at a 30-day executive order, and then he's got to come back to the General Assembly to go beyond 30 days. Because, you know, when we go a year and a half governing by executive order, it's not the right process to be able to govern the state. And I think we have to get to a point where the legislative body has a say in that. As far as the masking goes, look, you had local school districts, especially because of the lack of guidance from the governor into late summer, making their own decisions on this. Some school districts like 186 here in Springfield were going back to masking. Others were making it mask optional. And I think leaving it up to the local officials like that would have been the right way to go, working with the local health departments and things like that. Obviously, people disagree with that. That's not what happened, but I think that should have been the better way to do it.
Leaving it, so you're not in favor then, it sounds like, of a universal statewide mask mandate. I will acknowledge, as you said, I know you've tweeted about it. I wasn't at the news conference, but you have called for vaccines. You seem to be on, you know, more aligned with where the governor is, at least on some areas of the state's COVID response, certainly in terms of vaccines. But in terms of masking, doesn't it only work if everybody masks?
Well, first of all, you're not going to get 100% compliance because, and the same thing with vaccines, you're not going to get 100% compliance. I don't have a problem with if local entities or private businesses or whatever want to make their decisions based on if folks should be masked. I don't have a problem with local businesses saying, you know, with vaccine requirements, things like that. But again, I think these are better made on the local level. The other thing that's a problem is the governor doesn't give us any metrics for how we move backwards on, especially on this mandate. He doesn't give us metrics on how we move backward. And I'm literally looking at the Sangamon County dashboard right now. And it looks like this spike that we've seen with the Delta variant is starting to level off and possibly decline, which is what we've seen happen in India and the UK. And we still don't know, you know, what the metrics are to move backwards on these type of things. And so, you know, look, again, I think the governor should be a lot more collaborative on this, but he's decided to go it on his own. And that's put us in the position we are today when it comes to, you know, this kind of the split we have on everything.
One of your colleagues yesterday in the House, Representative Adam, is it Niemerg from Dietrich in Effingham County. I mean, he talked about, you know, he called the governor totalitarian and tyrannical and talked about masks stifling children intellectually. I mean, this is a significant strain in the Republican Party right now. And yet, as you've said, you're vaccinated, you're encouraging others to get vaccinated. How do you communicate that to Republicans in particular, where it seems to have become such a deep sort of marker of identity to sort of oppose what the so-called experts, as you hear, you know, are saying about COVID-19.
Yeah, I think, you know, each of us obviously are elected independently from our districts and have our own views on things. And I think that's one of the things that we certainly talk a lot about in our caucus is respecting everyone's individual views. I don't agree with members in my caucus on a wide variety of issues. And certainly I've encouraged them to, I've encouraged them to get vaccinated. I encourage them to talk to their local healthcare professionals about, you know, how we should approach this. I think that's an important thing to be able to listen to the physicians and the health professionals that know what they're talking about instead of getting your information out of some website that you never heard of before. But at the end of the day, I think the issue certainly surrounding masking for children and the impact that school closures had last year and obviously to a lesser extent masking, you know, there are some real concerns there about behavioral issues that we've had and things like that. And so people have strong feelings on it. I didn't hear all of it. I was actually off the floor when Representative Niemerg spoke last night, but I heard some of it on over the PA. But certainly, you know, he and I probably disagree on some things, but we'll probably agree on other things as well.
Last thing I want to ask you about, and we have just a couple minutes left here, is energy. This is one of the other big topics that people thought might have come up for a debate yesterday. It did in the Senate, not in the House. One of the big sticking points that there's, as we've talked about on this show many times in the past, a big package of legislation aimed at making the state's energy sector more green. One of the sticking points has been whether to set hard closure deadlines for two coal-burning power plants, one in the Metro East, across the river from St. Louis in Illinois, the other in Springfield. It would be in your new district, as based on the new maps. Where are you on ending coal burning in Springfield?
Well, I think, look, the I think the the fact of the matter is that coal-fired facilities know that they are transitioning out. We've seen them transition out over the past several years, largely because of natural gas, because of fracking. That's what has actually pushed a lot of the coal plants out of business. Here in Springfield and in Southern Illinois, the Prairie Generating Plant, these are facilities that came online a decade ago under the Obama administration. They actually came online with state-of-the-art clean coal technology. And it's my opinion that we should allow these plants to continue to generate the power that's needed for our communities through their, at least to pay off the bonds, which is the 2045 date. So the people of Springfield or the many municipalities and co-ops that benefit from the Prairie Generating Facility aren't paying twice for their power. I think the other question is, you know, if and when we transition away from here in Springfield, City Water, Light and Power, CWLP, where does our power come from? And we're in the mid-continent system operating. The power grid is called MISO, and much of downstate Illinois is in MISO. I just looked now, I mean, MISO has 50% right now at this moment, 50% of the energy being produced in that region from coal, 23% coming from natural gas. So we're going to have to pull energy from other sources if we take the CWLP offline. And right now, that's probably going to come from coal. It's a larger issue than just Illinois. I am one that believes that, you know, transitioning to renewables is the way to go. But we have to do it reasonably, and we have to make sure that everyone's power stays on. So we have the power that we need, especially going through, you know, the heat we've seen recently or in the middle of winter, or when you come home, your lights come on.
Yeah. And as though we needed the illustration, though, there was a huge, I want to mention, just a coal ash release, some sort of problem with the equipment apparently led to this large plume of coal ash that came out of the Springfield power plant yesterday. We're going to have to leave it there. State Representative Tim Butler, Republican from Springfield, Assistant Republican Leader, thank you for being with us and sharing your views today on the 21st.
Brian, I truly appreciate to be on a show named after the 21st state, so I appreciate the opportunity.